Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 82. Dave, the news is coming fast and furious. None of it really unexpected, but it was more kind of what day was the news going to come down, and it started. We're sitting here Thursday night. It started yesterday about 5 o'clock with the announcement that Hines Ward had been told that he was going to be released from his 2 years, the 2 years remaining on his contract. And then today, the news comes that Aaron Smith, with 1 year remaining on his contract, and Chris Kimowatu, who I think had 2 years remaining. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. He was under contract through 2012 and 2013.
They're all gone. So the Steelers have knocked $9.7 million off their 2007 salary obligations, and the cap number is obviously going to be slightly different because of some of the dead money moved forward. And then in the rule of 51, they're going to have some other guys take the spots of those three guys. But big news. What's your reaction?
None of it surprising whatsoever, David. And anybody that listens to this podcast or reads Steelers Depot on a regular basis, you were prepared for this. I know you were. You know, if you're a longtime listener, they saved today so far with those through the Hines Ward, Aaron Smith, and Chris Kimowatu release. That's going to equal out to roughly about $7.891 million. $1 million, a hair above that as far as actual salary cap savings. Now, of course, you have the displacement cost, what we call displacement cost on that, and that's three more bodies of basically $390,000 each that you'll add up, and that's basically, you take the difference of the two. But
And that gets you to about $6.7 million, which, interestingly enough, is exactly the difference, just coincidentally, between the wide receiver franchise tag and the first-round tender for Mike Wallace.
Yeah, now they still have some work to be done. When you're talking about the tenders and all like that, a lot of the raw numbers that I'm working with the salary cap-wise right now, I have factored in the tenders with this, and I'll kind of update you on a running number that I have going right now that includes the dead money and includes the rule of 51, speculating that the restricted tenders are handed out like we think they are, and that number right now is approximately $119 million. $887,000 and some loose change. So as you can see, they have enough money now to at least get all the tenders out, I think, and that includes a first-round tender on Mike Wallace, too, of $2.742 million, thereabouts, whatever that number comes in at. So, first of all, it leads me to believe that they're under the cap. I would not be surprised. You know, there was talk today, too, about James Ferrier. His agent, Ralph Sindridge, had thrown it out there and pretty much reinstated, because I think he said on the radio last weekend or so that he thought it was not looking good for Ferrier to return. So we could still see that cut coming as well, too. And then, you know, March 5th is still a few days away, David, and I'm not ruling out the possibility that they still get Mike Wallace signed to a long-term deal before they have to use that first-round tender on him.
Yeah, I just don't see that happening. They've got enough going on, but, that doesn't mean a deal's not going to get done. A long-term deal's not going to get done. I think the Steelers just have to make a decision by March 5th. And, with all the other things that are apparently going on, it just would surprise me. But, we'll see how that all plays out. Dave, let's go through the players a little bit. Hines Ward, we've discussed this a lot over the last 4 months, when Hines got demoted, I guess, around the Kansas City game. Wasn't overly productive this year. The debate now will be going forward, is Hines Ward a Hall of Fame player? I think everybody recognizes his contribution to the team. He was an elite level receiver. But I'm going to I'll play a little bit devil's advocate with you, Dave, and say I don't know that at any point in his career that Hines Ward was one of the four or five best receivers in the game. And I think if you aren't one of the best players in the game in your prime, it's very hard to make the Hall of Fame.
Well, he was right up, he was top 10 or, every year. He was never the premier wide receiver in the league. but he did a lot of things well, you know. So, I mean, let's look at it. The guy was a fierce blocker. I mean, the guy was just a deadly blocker. He, I mean, let's look back over his seasons here, you know, even starting as far back as 2001, 94 receptions, the lowest, you know, 2005, 69, and then, of course, the last two seasons, 59 and 46, respectively. This guy had a 1,000-yard receiving regular season years, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of those, and a couple of them in the 900s there. Deadly on third down, could always move the chains, good red zone production and all like that. So, you know, was he was one of the most complete wide receivers. Now, was he at any time the best wide receiver in the game? No, but I don't think you should hold that against him. I think we've had this talk before. I think he'll be in the Hall of Fame. I don't think he's going to be a first ballot guy, but I could definitely see him as a second or third ballot type guy.
Well, Dave, if you're going to say a guy who's not the elite at his position in his prime makes the Hall of Fame, I mean, we're going to have, you know, 9,000 guys in the Hall of Fame. There are a lot of really good players who did a lot of really good things. I don't think anybody's arguing that Hines wasn't a great player, but you know, we're talking the Hall of Fame. I'm a little bit torn on this. I think he probably does get in, but I think there's a very reasonable case made for him not getting in.
Was he a complete receiver, David? I mean, was he just not he was not one-dimensional. Would you agree with that?
Well, I'm not sure quite what that means. He was a great blocker. He was never a speed burner. I mean, I don't think he ever averaged 15 yards a catch in any season like that. He was a I don't know what complete receiver means. He did a lot of things well, certainly.
Well, that's complete in my book.
Well, no, I mean, he wasn't going to beat you deep. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, do they have a separate wing in the Hall of Fame for speed burner wide receivers?
No, but I mean, if you're going to say a complete receiver, it's like saying as a guy, you know, a five-tool baseball player. If he's got four of the five tools, he's not, you know, it may not matter much. If he doesn't have an outfielder, doesn't have a great arm, it doesn't mean he can't make the Hall of Fame.
How many wide receivers in the Hall of Fame lack deep speed?
Well, let me ask you this: is he a better? Is he better than Chris Carter? Is he better than Tim Brown? Is he better than Terrell Owens? And he's better than Randy Moss?
Chris Carter, I say yes. Tim Brown, I would say yes on Tim Brown. Now, Randy Moss and Terrell Owens, I mean, no. I mean, I don't think so. But I do think Hines, when you look back over the era that he played in, I think he was one of the top wide receivers in the league. You know, he was Mr. Dependable, too. I mean, he hardly missed a game. The stats speak for themselves. 1,000 receptions, over 12,000 yards, a career receiving average of 12.1 yards. Let's see, 85 touchdowns. The guy could block, you know, a complete team player. And I think that's what it's going to come down to. I mean, how many guys are in the Hall of Fame that never led the league in receiving or catches, you know, in a single season?
Well, I don't think you say because guys who are in the Hall of Fame don't deserve to be in there that you go forward with that. You know, how about Marvin Harrison?
Marvin Harrison will get there.
Reggie Wayne?
No, I'm not ready to put him there yet.
All right, you know, I think it's an interesting debate.
Look what's out there right now. I mean,
they're only taking five guys a year.
Right, really. Right. And I said
put five receivers ahead of him.
And I said he was not going to be a first ballot guy. So, you know, look at the time. Come that time, which I mean, evidently that's still going to be about what, 6 years away, probably at the least.
Well, I don't expect him to play this year. I don't think another team will pick him up.
I think a team actually might, to be honest with you. It would not, let me put it to you this way, it would not surprise me if they did. But, okay, well, let's say he hangs it up 5 years from now. I mean, look at the group of wide receivers that'll be in the, up against him probably. Like I said, I don't think this guy's going to be a first ballot guy, but I think he will get in on a second or a third try. I think he has the numbers and the playing style and the type I bet Ed Bichette will tell you this too. You know, I think, attitude and demeanor, I think all that plays into it as well too.
Interesting. I'll just give you Reggie Wayne's numbers. He's got 862 career catches, a 13.6 yards average. He's got 73 TDs. He's going to pass Hines in numbers. Marvin Harrison's numbers are better. I just think the number, if you're going to go on numbers,
back up. How many receptions does Reggie Wayne have?
862.
So you're telling me he's going to break 1,000 receptions by the time it's all over?
Sure, he's played 10 seasons. He had 100, 111, and 75 the last 3 years. If he just goes 75, 75 in the next 2 years, he breaks it.
I don't think he's going to get that number. I don't think he's going to get that number in the next two. Now, I think he'd have to play three or so years to get it, but he needs
69 catches the next 2 years, and since 2004, he's never had less than 75. So. And he had 68 in 2003. So I think if he's playing, he's going to get it.
Okay, so he's right there. Let's say he finishes right there on the same level with Hines as far as reception goes. How many yards does he have?
Well, he's got 13.6 a catch, so he's at 11. So he's got a higher average per catch.
Okay, but I Reggie Wayne, I don't know. I mean, let's get to that point. But
how many TDs does Hines have?
Hines has 85 career regular season receptions.
So their numbers are going to be big, and Wayne's got 73. So their career numbers are going to end up, 2 years from now, assuming Reggie Wayne is kind of along the path that he is now, their numbers are going to look very similar. Now, no question, Hines Ward is a better blocker than Reggie Wayne, but they're going to be similar.
So are you going to take away from Reggie Wayne then because he's not a good blocker then? Sounds like you. I mean,
no, I'm going to say if I have to compare guys, I might put Hines Ward ahead of Reggie Wayne.
Okay.
Certainly you got to, all these guys are going to get compared. I mean, you don't think Tim Brown and Chris Carter and Andre Reed, the guys are comparing them? Yeah, that's exactly what you're
right. And I think that's why a lot of these guys, the logjam there at receiver right now, it will start to be broken, I think, next year there with a couple of those guys, Chris Carter and Tim Brown. I'm not sure if either one of those guys get in it right now. I mean, I really have to re-examine the stats. And look, David, I've tried to look at this without the blinders on too several times, and I admit it's hard to do, but I just think with the style of play that Hines Ward had, the numbers that he put up, the longevity, the type person that he played, the type player that he was, I think all that combined, I do think he gets in the hall. And I'll reiterate, I don't think it'll be first ballot. I think it'll probably second or third.
You think it's a slam dunk?
Well, I mean, a slam dunk would say, if I was saying it was a slam dunk, I'd say it was first ballot. No, I don't think it's a first ballot slam dunk.
Okay. Let's move on because this is going to get debated for a couple weeks now and 5 years from now. It's going to be a huge debate. And I think it's going to, I'll tell you what's going to work against Hines is the fact that, he is going to be Randy Moss, the same class if neither of them play this year. And Terrell Owens is going to be a year ahead. And, you just hope you don't stay on that list for 5 or 6 years, because I think the longer you're out, you're not in, you get guys, your role, the people who saw you play, there are less of them, and your role becomes kind of diminished. And I do think over time, because a lot of what we talk about are intangibles with Hines Ward, those are going to be harder to kind of carry to the table a bunch of years from now. So hopefully... hopefully it happens quickly, but we'll see.
And okay, how much do Super Bowls count in Hines? Let's just wrap this up in a nice tidy bow here, though.
I think Super Bowls count a lot. I think the Super Bowl MVP doesn't count at all. Okay. I think it's been significant.
Throw the MVP out, though, but Super Bowls count. The guys played in quite a few of them and won quite, one.
They played three, won two. Yeah. No question that's helpful.
All right, so I mean, that's what I'm basically saying there. I mean, that definitely is going to be in his favor there, on top of everything else.
I don't disagree with any of that. I just think this is going to be. Look, it's not Steeler fans voting. It's guys in the league and guys around the league. And I think I think the intangible thing is a much harder thing down the road to look at. And it'll be interesting to see how it's perceived. I will tell you, it'll be interesting to see who's carrying the torch for Hines if they don't change the election process, because it's a pretty decent bet that 5 years from now, Ed Bouchette won't be in that room anymore. But maybe it'll turn out that they change how they do the election, and they have a broader pool. And hopefully at some point in time they do.
Maybe you'll be in there by then.
Maybe you'll be in there. Who knows?
Didn't Rich Gosselin, didn't he have an article or something? I thought I saw something like that. I haven't had a chance to read it, but I think he's kind of in the boat that you are, that he doesn't think Hines Ward to get in.
I found it really interesting on Twitter yesterday. A lot of NFL people gave their opinion, and they, you know, gave it very straightforward. I mean, I know Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders said yes. Obviously, Prisco, who loves to kill Steeler fans and all things Steelers, he said no. A lot of people came down and gave their opinions, and I, you know, from just my unofficial tally, it seemed about evenly split.
Yeah, and that's probably what it's going to be for the initial time here. Now, as you said, the further they get away from the game and all like that, and it's going to be interesting who's trying to battle for him and who's trying to make the argument for him. And you're right, you know, Ed Bouchette's covered Hines Ward for a long time. If he ain't in there trying to carry the torch and battle for him, hey, maybe that does make a difference come time. So maybe Ed Bouchette needs to make sure he hangs around another 5 or 6 years, but I'm not sure that's going to happen.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Moving on from Hines.
Hey, well, let's throw it out there to the listeners while we're on the subject, too, and then have them send us some emails on this, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com.
Absolutely. Love to hear people's views and try to, as you said, you know, let's not look at this straight through, you know, black and gold glasses, because he's clearly in the Steelers Hall of Fame, and I think he probably goes down as the greatest Steeler receiver ever. I think he's probably surpassed Lynn Swann, and I think he probably surpassed John Stallworth. Okay, Dave, I know we just tried to wrap that up in a bow, and I just want to give you one more. I want to give you one more kind of quiz here, because I just pulled up. I was having trouble finding it, but I just pulled up some stats, and I guess what I've focused on here is as much about Hines Ward, but the other guys who are going to be in the conversation when Hines Ward is looking at it. I didn't realize Chris Carter and Tim Brown are fourth and fifth in the career receptions list at 1,101 and 1,094. That's interesting. But the other guys, we now have you got the two receivers from the Rams. You got Isaac Bruce, who retired in 2009. You have Torrey Holt, who's still in the game with 920 receptions.
No, he's not. Torrey Holt's retired.
I mean, Torrey Holt, yeah, he retired, sorry, in 2009 as well. I mean, so these guys are going to be in the game in a conversation about the time that Hines is coming around. So with Randy Moss and Terrell Owens and these other guys. So I just wonder how that's going to affect the backlog of guys coming up, how that's going to, you know, that's I guess, one of the key things that I'm trying to focus on here. And because those guys are peers, it's going to be a lot easier for people to compare them.
And that's why I think, you know, they're not going to let in, you know, three of those guys at a time, you know. That's why I think they're kind of staggered, and that's why I think it won't be a first ballot for him, but I think second or third ballot, he's going to get in. I think it's going to mirror kind of what happened to probably Damani Dawson, and you know, Jerome Bettis will probably get in next year. So once that kind of that log jam is kind of broken there, then they'll start flowing through, and it might take a couple of times.
Okay, I'll have a gentleman's bet with you that it takes him at least 5 years, just because if they're taking one receiver at a time, we got three guys I think who are clearly ahead of him, and Marvin Harris, Randy Moss, and T.O., and I think some of those guys will be going up against Hines, you know, when he's on the ballot.
So that you're basically telling me that bet is has expiration date of 10 years from now?
Yeah, we got a 10-year. Hopefully
I'll be dead by then.
Hopefully we get to have the conversation and have, you know, get to enjoy that one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, all right. So a lot of time talking about Hines. Let's get on to Aaron Smith. I think you said it to me before we got on the air. Why don't you go ahead? You've written some great stuff about him, and why don't you go ahead?
The guy, I mean, one of the all-time great 3-4-5 five technique type defensive ends. I mean, the guy, it's unfortunate that the guy's last 3 years had just been marred by injury, because during his prime, that's exactly how you build. I mean, if you were to actually go to a draft, I mean, go to a board and draw out what you wanted a defensive end in a 3-4 system to look like and play like, I mean, Aaron Smith was it during his prime. And it's just so sad to see it in a kind of a release like this. And all we've known, it's been coming for a while, ever since the neck surgery last year. They gave him one last hurrah, keeping him around last year and all. So I was really hoping he would retire before it got to this, but it didn't. So I don't see him playing for another team. I expect now, another month or so from now, probably be a press conference that he'll announce his retirement. I just wish he would have done it a little bit earlier instead of being officially termed as released.
Well, Dave, I'll give you the answer that really surprised me, because I said something on Twitter about that earlier today, and his agent referenced Chris Hoke's press conference, and he said Aaron attended that and it was great, but Aaron won't have one. He's going to go in like he came out. He's going to go out like he came in camouflage, unassuming. There'll be no press conference. There won't be anything. The last thing in the world he wants to do is draw attention to himself. So I guess at some point he'll have to file his retirement papers with the league so he gets his benefits and all of that. But I was surprised to hear that, and I think the way his agent talked about it, he said, look, there are absolutely no hard feelings on either side. The Steelers, he had a great conversation with Coach Tomlin and Mr. Rooney today, and we're celebrating the 14 years that they had together and celebrating the fact that he's going to get to spend more time with his wife and his kids. And, it's great stuff. So I think it's just semantics. I was surprised as well. I had the same reaction you did. I'm sure the Steelers probably said to him, do you want to have a retirement press conference? And, we can do it that way. And he said, no, let's just move along.
And a great human being, too. I mean, forget the player aspect and all like that. You know, his son, what his son went through battling, what he battled. And, he's got a lot of longtime friends, Brett Kiesel, Chris Hoke. All those guys have helped him out and his son over the years. And he does a lot for the Children's Hospital as well. A great human being, throw the football side of it out. And that he really defined, him and Chris Hoke both, and Hines Ward, they define what the Pittsburgh Steelers are about. And it is a sad day, and I hate, we get all caught up in these numbers and we got to move forward and this was the right move and all like that. And I know we kind of take out the human element and the emotion element out of it as well. And I hate to sound, insensitive to it. And I really do. I mean, it's been a sad, sad week in Steeler Nation. I mean, the Hines Ward, Aaron Smith, possibly James Ferrier going to be released here anytime now as well, too. And yeah, it's an end of an era and you need to reflect on that. But then, if you're smart, you're going to reflect on it and be thankful for the memories. And then you're going to move on and know that that was the right decision and for the best for the Steelers going forward.
Yeah, I think I don't think there's any question that Aaron Smith's decision was kind of all sides are on board with that. The Hines situation is something different, and we've seen it with athletes across the board. It's tough to walk away. It's something you do. I do think that it's wrong for people to say the guy should retire. That's everybody's own decision. Everybody has the right to make that decision. Sure, as a Steeler fan, you'd prefer not to see Hines Ward in a Philadelphia Eagles uniform or whatever possible team would want to have him. Yeah, that's fine. Does it tarnish his reputation? Not at all in my mind. I think you've earned that right to play as long as you get to play, as long as you want to play, because, you got to get on with the rest of your life. So I find it really inappropriate for guys in the media to call on guys to retire. Every person's allowed to make their own decision. I think there are some writers out there who should retire. So that part bothers me. I think Aaron Smith is going out and no problems with that. The third guy in the group, Chris Kimoatu, is maybe in some ways the most interesting, because he's a guy who I think he'll get some bites in free agency, and I expect him to be in somebody else's uniform next year.
I think it all depends on the status of that bulky arthritic knee. Whatever happens, if Kimoatu does sign with somebody, he's going to miss some games. You can go ahead and pencil that in. You know, he's not a premier left guard. He never has been. Now, in his defense, though, Kimo Otto has had some great games during his Steelers career. Let me tell you, when that guy was on the money, as far as pulling to the right on some of those power counter trade, counter trap type runs and all, when that guy hit his mark, he hit his mark, brother. I'm here to tell you. And there were a lot more good times than bad, or, you know, during a few of those seasons there. Unfortunately, the last couple of seasons, there's been more bad than good. So when you throw that balky knee on top of it and the bad penalties that he likes to take and how he doesn't stay focused all the time, we could see this one coming a mile away here. He was signed through the 2013 season. You know, who knows? If he passes through free agency and the Steelers get bit once again by that offensive line injury bug that they've seen been following him around the last couple years, he might be a guy that they might pull back off the street at the NFL minimum to get him by. You know, I think he still has some swing guard type capabilities left in him. You know, he's not a guy that you want to commit to week by any stretch of the imagination. But, I would not be surprised if he signed with another team.
Yeah, I think, you know, for $1.5 million, $2 million, Chris Kimo Otto as your third guard, or, you know, certainly competing for a starting spot, as a good guy. Our buddy Mark Cabali has told you, you know, he has flat out said that on his good days, Chris Kimo Otto is as good as any offensive lineman the Steelers have, and that includes Marquise Pouncey. And there's certainly, everybody will tell you, as we saw Willie Colon tweet and we've heard from plenty of others, that he is one tough son of a bitch. And we certainly saw the nasty streak. And unfortunately, the nasty streak sometimes, impaired his play and his judgment and got him, you know, I think eventually got him benched because, all the personal fouls that he tallied up. The other thing that was interesting to read from Mark Cabali, he said the mental part of the game was a problem. Now, I don't know. I assume he meant like controlling his emotions and things like that. But, maybe he was getting some of his blocking assignments wrong along the way as well. So, Dave, the money saved, we talked about up top. It sounds like it's about the cap savings. We're adding three other players to that at the $400,000 number. It's going to be about around $6.5 million. We're still surprised at this late date now that we don't know what the exact cap number is, and we talked about it in our last show, but it looks like the Steelers have room with the tenders that you talked about. It looks like they're basically where they need to be, with the big question being the two linebackers, Foot and Ferrier, are they going to stay on the roster?
Yeah, exactly right. And I would not be surprised if there's not, you know, outside of Ferrier, which, you know, his agent said, look, he's not very hopeful. It didn't sound like Ferrier sticking there. You still got somebody like Jonathan Scott with a couple of million dollars hanging around there that you could do something with on top of it there. So, they are underneath the – I think they have enough room now to afford all the tenders and all like that. And listen, let me go back to my comment on Mike Wallace before the March 5th deadline. That deadline is just for the tendering process. That's not the start of free agency. So even right. If they were to place the first round tender on him before March the 5th, you've still got the whole, you know, a whole another week, a little less than a week there, to work out the long term deal.
I think it's the 13th. They got 8 days.
Right, the 13th. You still got until then to work out a long term deal. To go from there. So don't fear. I mean, I've thrown it out there that I thought maybe by the time the tenders are handed out there on March 5th, that maybe that'd be a long term deal in place. If it's not, you know, give me another week there as a leeway, because I still am pretty confident that they're not going to let him dangle out there on just a first-round tender. I think they're going to get him locked up.
Okay, I'll take the other side of that, but we'll see how things go. The national media has finally come around a little bit to the, you know, they finally came around today to the Mike Wallace situation, because the Steelers flat-out said it. And the Steelers have cut $41 million in salary out of their obligations. They clearly appear to be under the cap. Let me just get back on my now I feel like we've kind of explained this, and our listeners have been on top of this for 2 or 3 weeks, and the great job you've done on SteelersDepot.com, making sure that, you know, people understand the cap numbers and can see immediately when these cuts happen, how much the Steelers are saving in cap and what the charges are. Let me get on my little rant here. The Rooneys have said it's unlikely the Steelers are going to do anything with their unrestricted free agents, before March 13th, when the new season in the NFL starts. I think now the Steelers are going to have the money. I know I'm in the minority here, but I think the Steelers are going to have the money, and I think they're going to get something done with Jericho Cotchery. And I've been saying this for a couple of weeks now, and you wrote on the blog that Scott Brown reported that the Steelers had whatever productive means, productive talks with Jericho Cotchery's agent.
Yeah, absolutely, and I don't think that comes as a surprise. And I believe them that I don't think they're going to have Cotchery signed by the start of free agency. I really don't. And let's face it, Cotchery's not going to get. There's not going to be a lot of interest there initially on him as well too. You know, their first course of action. Let's face it. Their first course of action, if all possible, is to get Mike Wallace locked away. I mean, Art Rooney II said that even after the season started, he's going to be a priority. It's no surprise that the Steelers are not active in free agency with outside free agents. They'd much rather sign their own. They're willing to take the gamble that after a first couple, 3 or 4 or 5 weeks or so, that Cotchery's not going to get any attention. They know deep down inside that Cotchery would like to return to Pittsburgh. He's said as much. He wants a multi-year deal. I don't think he's going to get 4 or 5 years like he likes, but I think a very modest 3-year contract for Jericho is definitely a possibility. And I think free agency opens up middle of March. Probably sometime after the draft, I think you could see something like that come together.
I don't know about the timeline exactly. It wouldn't shock me, depending on how the Wallace stuff unfolds, if the Steelers are able to do something before that. But, you know, obviously we get to the point, you know, there's only a certain amount of time when other teams can make an offer sheet signing to Mike Wallace, because once the draft comes, obviously that window is gone. So I don't know what the exact date is, but basically we're looking at a month in time where the Steelers, you know, will have to worry about, if they put a first-round tender on him, worry about what other teams' intentions are, and then that window will have closed. So there will be less urgency to get a long-term deal done, because they'll know they have Mike Wallace for $2.7 million for this season. So they can work basically from April up to the start of the regular season in September, which is basically their practice, to work on that long-term deal. But they can also then know they have cost certainty with Mike Wallace at that number and work on filling out the rest of the roster, the draft picks, and any other kind of ancillary free agents they might want to look at. Let's not say the Steelers never signed big guys, because they did sign James Ferrier. They did sign Ryan Clark. They've gone out and gotten a few guys from Mawaldi Moore along the way to fill roles, and that may be something they do again. But I think a 3-year deal at something like $7 million, $6 to $7 million, where Jericho Cotchery gets some of that money up front, and he makes, you know, $1.75 to $2 million in salary, would be a great deal for the Steelers. And because, you know, guys are so focused, the media is so focused on guys being number twos, number threes, number fours. Look, the Steelers are going to have three wide receivers on the field a lot of the time. They do use 4 wide receiver sets. And we know with Emmanuel Sanders, there is some injury history there. So, you know, it's not like the guy who's the fourth receiver isn't going to catch, you know, 30 or 40 balls. They are going to catch 30 or 40 balls. And this is Jericho Cotchery's last contract. And I think if he can get something like $6 or $7 million for 3 years, supposed to be a great guy, a great locker room guy, and kind of be a mentor that Hines Ward's not going to be to some of these younger guys, it's a good deal for everybody involved.
Yeah, let's not forget, this guy only had 16 catches, 237 yards, and 2 touchdowns last year. They're not going to be beaten down his door.
Exactly.
On top of it there. And to answer your other question there, April 20th, I think, is the offer sheet deadline for restricted free agents. You know, go ahead and file that in the back of your mind there.
I assume that's got to be a week before the draft, right? Because the team has a week to match.
Yeah, I think it's something like that, because I think all that's usually kind of settled before the draft there. So,
realistically, you can't. It would be very difficult for me to see a team kind of on April 10th or April 15th making that move. You would think this is a move because he only gets to sign with one team. So if somebody's going to do it, you think they'll try to do it right out of the chute and go after and get him. This is not something that's going to drag out. If somebody's going to go after Mike Wallace, I think you're going to know by kind of March 20th.
Right. I would think within the first 2 weeks, easily on that. And real quick on the Mike Wallace thing, let's hammer this out here. Here's why it's beneficial. You know, it's a gamble for Wallace. Okay. And I think we kind of touched on this a little bit. If you know, if they put that, if he does not have a new deal by the time free agency opens, and he's on that 2.7 something first round tender tag there, and he gambles going into free agency without, hey, that's a low number. You know, that's easy for the Steelers to swallow, much easier probably than a first-year contract. I mean, a first-year cap.
Oh, yeah, but, and that's why I think that's a big advantage.
And he, that's a gamble. If he goes into, you know, then that, let me tell you, if I'm Omar Khan, I'm saying, look, you know, you have all of our deals together right now and here. But we're going to tell you this. You, if you go into free agency and you don't get any offer sheets or whatnot, then you're running the risk of us letting you ride that whole season on that 2.7 and you not getting paid, and then we turn around and throw the franchise tag on you next year, you know, when we have probably a little bit more cap room to play with and go through this whole process again. And then in that meantime, you could have a career-ending injury. You could have a down season. You could have several things that just blows your market value out of the water. So do you want to get paid now at a fair value, and we know you want to stay in Pittsburgh, or do you want to risk going into free agency on a 2.74 whatever million first-round tender tag and us holding you to that for the entire 2012 season?
I think you hit it right on the head. I think the Steelers would be comfortable. Now, look at $2.7 million this year. That's a bit of a bargain for Mike Wallace. They turn and franchise him next year. Well, the one thing is, if they do that, Mike Wallace is going to get $10 million. So he's going to get a payday, which is, you know, great for him, and hopefully it's well deserved because he has a great season and everything works out. So, but you know, this is the two last remaining questions here. Maybe a few more, but the remaining questions here are, what are the Steelers going to do with the inside linebacker? And it now looks like that's going to be a need position that I would expect the Steelers to, you know, target in the first three rounds of the draft. It sounds like they're only going to keep one of Foot and Ferrier, and Foot's the younger guy. Maybe they felt Ferrier's play really dropped off, and their salaries are very close. I think Ferrier comes in at 2.8 and Foot at $3 million, believe it or not. But it sounds like maybe James Ferrier stays it on. And then you mentioned Jonathan Scott. He's the other guy who maybe they can wait longer to figure that out now. But he's another guy who's kind of hasn't been talked about much, who may go.
Yeah, and you also let's add Will Allen to the list there, although he's a Mike Tomlin type of guy, and I could see, well, you know, you're not going to really save that much right now by cutting him anyway until you make sure you get through the draft and all like that. Will Allen's also a special teams player, and they've already cut one of their key aces on special teams as well, too. So, you know, I think one, maybe two more moves are in the works here. You know, Ferrier's definitely a distinct possibility. I think Jonathan Scott is as well, too. And, hey, you know, maybe they ain't talking Casey Hampton into giving back a little bit of money there. I'm not going to hold my breath on it, but you know, that this may be a possibility there, knowing that he's going to probably start training camp, at least probably on the PUP list. So then, you know, they've still got some place to maybe to get a little bit more money here, and the key thing is they're going to be and they have to be cap compliant, and they are. None of these moves that we talked about at the top of the show have caught us off guard. At least me and you, they haven't, and hopefully a lot of our listeners, they haven't caught off guard either there. So they're in good shape. I would like to see Cotri re-sign, as we said. Definitely need to get Mike Wallace back under contract again, and I'm going to stick to my guns, say that happens before free agency opens. But, I think Omar's done a great job. I think the least amount of bloodshed has been had throughout all this.
Yep, I think you hit it right on the head. That the Dave, I know tomorrow that we're talking Thursday night, kind of a special edition of the Terrible Podcast because of the roster moves the Steelers have made, breaking news edition. Tomorrow, you will be with Cecil Lammy. Hopefully, I'll get to join you. You're going to talk all things draft. I think this process has probably crystallized for many Steeler fans is their areas of need, and there's no question right now. The areas of need for the Steelers, without kind of putting a priority on one, two, or three here, are the two lines, with Casey Hampton probably being in the last year with the Steelers, the issues they have at inside linebacker, the other area of need, and then it looks like guard position and having backup offensive linemen. So, you know, again in the draft, don't expect them to go skill players high. It looks like corner is less of a need, and so we're going to see kind of the interior positions again being the focus of the Steelers in this draft.
I think so. I think you hit it on the head. I think guard, I think nose tackle, and I think inside linebacker early on. I think they're going to grab a wide receiver probably around round four or five in there. Hey, let's take a real quick realistic look at the tight end position, David. I mean, you've got Heath Miller, closing in right around the big 3-0 number. Of course, his play has not dropped off. You've got Wesley Saunders, though, who's going to be out the first four games if he makes the roster. You're going to have David Johnson, who's really just basically a fullback. He's not a receiving threat tight end, H-back fullback type. So, hey, you know, who knows? Maybe round two, if one of those top two tight ends are there, maybe best player available in a not deep tight end class at all. Maybe that's something they look there as well.
Yep, wouldn't surprise me as well. So there is a belief among the Steeler beat writers that Wesley Saunders has kind of sealed his fate with the Steelers by failing a drug test or whatever he failed to get a 4-game suspension. I'm not quite so sure it's cut and dry like that, but we'll see what happens. But it's certainly they're going to have to look at the tight end position. And I would suggest maybe if you were going to guess on where the Steelers might look in the free agency market, that might be something that that they take a look at in the free agency market.
Yeah, it's possible, but I think they would much rather re-sign their own. I think guys like William Gay, if he passes through free agency again, kind of think about bringing him back. Of course, you know, you got your two quarterbacks that they want to bring back, Charlie Batch and Byron Leftwich, according to Kevin Colbert. They're open to that. So keep that in mind with the cost going forward at that. You got Milwaldy Moore out there too, and I'm fixing to post something up on Milwaldy Moore tonight in a recent interview that he did. Of course, he wants to come back, but, you know, there's only so many roster spots to go around, and they very well could draft a running back at some point in the draft. To kind of bring in and kind of compete with some of those younger guys as well too. So maybe a fringe type free agent, a special teams ace or something like that in free agency, but I'm not expecting anything when the bell rings, middle of March there.
Yep. Well, Dave, great stuff as always. As you said, this will go up probably late tonight, and Dave will be, hopefully both of us will be with Cecil Lammy, and we'll get really into the draft stuff now that the Combine's passes by. Everybody and their sister has a mock draft. I think there is a site out there that has aggregated mock drafts and has like 230 different mock drafts available if people want to go through that. But certainly a lot of the interest early on, people have the Steelers taking either Dontari Poe, who looks like through the combine may have pushed himself up high enough that he's not available when the Steelers pick, or Dont'a Hightower, the inside linebacker from Alabama. But, we will get into that further tomorrow.
Yeah, and Cecil was at the NFL Combine. He's been covering the Combine for years. I really respect his opinion. I've done a lot of tape study over the last couple of weeks as well, too, on some of these kids. We're really going to go at it on a couple of these prospects that the Steelers might have their eye on. So make sure to tune into the Friday podcast as well. It's going to be a good one. It's going to be all talking about the draft.
All right, Dave, great stuff. Some tears shed in Steeler around Steeler Nation this week as two of the great ones, two of the all-time great Steelers, Hines Ward and Aaron Smith, are told that they're not going to be a seat, a jersey available for them come this fall. Not as really a surprise, but a sad week nonetheless. And that's going to wrap it up for us at the Terrible Podcast. Follow Dave on Steelers Depot and all his great work at SteelersDepot.com. And you can follow me at Hammer Speaks. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.